Hello, welcome to Charity Chat. I'm your host, Samuel Davies. In this episode, we speak with Bernard McCabe, founder and director of Dreamscape Solutions, about the benefits and need of charities using key performance indicators, KPIs, and specifically in relation to developing and improving donor recognition and long-term relationship building with donors. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for businesses to fundraise from sales quick and simple, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and to book a free demo. So without further ado, here is Bernard McCabe speaking about the need for better KPIs. I'm delighted to be joined by Bernard McCabe, founder of Dreamscape Solutions. Bernard, welcome to Charity Chat.
Oh, thanks, Sam. It's nice to be with you here today. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. Maybe if we can start by, if you can explain maybe to our listeners what your background is, what's led you to found Dreamscape Solutions and what you do.
Yeah, after leaving university, I worked with several e-commerce and e-learning companies as their head of design and user experience. So typical clients that we worked with, they're all major, large blue chip organisations such as Royal Bank of Scotland, Daimler Chrysler, PwC, Deloitte and Network Rail, to name a few. What that did is it gave me a lot of experience in creating immersive online experiences that delivered meaningful outcomes and essentially commercial transactions. Now, in terms of what inspired me to found Dreamscape, that's actually a question that I've pondered quite a lot over the last 20 years. And ultimately, I think it comes down to a passion to making others happy. That's a fundamental goal, which is kind of underpinned by a design to be a caring and compassionate service provider that's committed to achieving excellence for our clients. I think as such, those qualities are our company values, which, you know, shape a lot of the areas of our business, really. And the final thing that I'd like to point out, and I think it's important, is that I've always been driven to provide smaller organisations with access to those higher levels of functionality that might not typically have been within their reach. And this very much feeds into our focus of working within the not-for-profit sector, where, let's face it, the overwhelming majority of organisations, they're up against big brand charities that are fortunate enough to have, you know, the internal resources to operate at kind of the vanguard of technology and innovation. So I suppose in a way you could say that it's my mission to bring enterprise level technology within the reach of smaller but still highly aspirational charities who are both sharing a passion for achieving excellence.
So your background with charities, so have you benefited, volunteered, fundraised for charities, you know, in your earlier years?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've done quite a few events. I think my most famous event was one of the kind of Strictly Come Dancing events.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was quite, awakening point for me, really. It took about a year to go through the whole process of weekly dance lessons and the stress that applied, as well as the strain and stress of asking your peer network to support you on that journey. And that was really enlightening for me in terms of, you know, what levels of support charities are able to offer someone on that kind of journey, that experience. And ultimately, the thrill of completing the event, but also the emotional downturn post-event, that once it was all over, where was I? And how did I feel after that experience, which took a lot of commitments, as I say. That was really enlightening for me and has spurred us on to put donor experience excellence at the heart of everything that we do and talk to our clients about, is the satisfaction, emotional connection after a level of support is crucial to maintaining levels of support from the community, really.
And I think that's certainly from my experience as well. You know, there are those kind of good, I suppose in the sector we talk about supporter journeys, don't we? But for the person doing the event, for the fundraiser, you know, they're doing something for the charity. They're getting something out of it themselves, hopefully, you know, if it's a challenge event or come dancing, they're getting fitter or they're enjoying the process and the event. But then afterwards, there's also that it's probably as important, I would think, for charities to maintain and develop the relationship after the person's done the fundraising, as well as thanking them, but actually kind of continuing that journey. Otherwise, I guess it's the equivalent of having a lovely night out with a friend and then never speaking to that person again.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Sam. Everything you just said there is exactly the same as our approach and our philosophy is that retaining support is a fundamental requirement and KPI that we need to measure and manage for the charity sector to grow, really. I think it's stuck in a bit of a rut, a stagnant position, and I think improving donor care post-transaction is crucial.
Many of our listeners work, volunteer, or support charities both in the UK and across the world. What challenges do you see charities face when it comes to setting and meeting objectives, benchmarking, and measuring their success, as well as learning from their failures?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question again, Sam. Thank you. I think the main challenge that I see is that there's this constant frenzy to raise revenue. And ultimately, that's just skews the setting and the prioritising of objectives. And, you know, I think it's understandable that gaining donors is and should be a primary objective for charities. But without a balanced approach to delivering donor experience excellence and achieving sustainable levels of support or retention, then most charities find themselves in this constant cycle of gaining and losing support. And to put this into perspective for you, our research shows that for every 100 donors a charity gains, they're going to lose 100 through attrition. We refer to that as the leaky bucket syndrome. And really, it's the number one cause for a stagnant sector. The reality is, unfortunately, that far too often fundraisers, they find themselves pressured to organise the next event or prepare the next mailing campaign, rather than having the time to develop longer term benefits from new or existing donors. And this cycle of behaviour often leads to a propensity in UK fundraising to treat donors as, dare I say, quick win cash machines, rather than individuals who yearn for kind of long-term connections with a cause. And as I touched on before, this cultural bias, as I refer to it, that places income before experience, it's illustrated in the UK's average fundraising KPI metrics, which show high levels of donor acquisition at about 60%, but low levels of retention at about 40%. And a final thought I'd like to leave you with on this point is that our research shows that on average, only 2 in 10 first-time donors will support a charity again. And to me, that suggests that there's low levels of satisfaction with supporters who often feel shortchanged by their, dare I say, post-transaction experience.
There's change in the culture from the sounds of it. I know that, you know, I've worked in lots of charities myself, and I know that from the people we've spoken to on the podcast, there does seem to be that pressure on go out and get rather than kind of look after the people that are already supporting your cause, which seems really kind of counterintuitive, doesn't it? But I guess that pressure also comes from the fact that, you know, if a organization has got lots of activities or big, very big fundraising targets and is constantly driving to get to new people, to get those people to do things, then in the longer term, they're missing out on deeper relationships with people who might be more willing to give. Maybe the gift they gave this year, that's all they can afford this year. But over a number of years, then they're that the value that they can provide is considerably higher.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that longer term strategy of along the life cycle of a donor and their average value across a longer period of time. Listen, you know, it's not a criticism. It's more of a kind of a reflection of the state of where things are at the moment. And I think, you know, charities are really pressured with resources, limited resources. Mm. So asking, you know, fundraisers to, you know, spin too many plates just isn't going to work. I think this is where, you know, I'll come back to the first question you asked about how and where it came from. This use of technology is where I think we can improve the efficiency of being able to deliver, you know, stewardship or donor care strategies without the burden, additional burden that's placed on a fundraiser's, you know, endless to-do list. I suppose I'm talking about automation at that point. I'm not saying that automation should replace the personal connection that we have, but it needs to be proportional to the value of support. Hmm. You know, if someone's doing a fundraising event like we've previously talked to, then a personal connection and a personal thanks, you know, is critical there. Whereas smaller, more, you know, what I call mass volume, low value donations, which are typically around £30 in the UK. The cost associated with a personal thanks with that is just, you know, it's not proportional, and a commercial organisation wouldn't kind of sign off on that. And that's where, you know, we need to think about innovative ways. And, you know, dare I even touch on AI, you know, how that can be used in the future within the sector, but using technology to improve experiences. And if you look, really, that's what the commercial sector do. Mm. You know, that's what the big brands do. And we're hoping to take a leaf out of that book. And again, like I said, make it accessible and reachable to smaller yet aspirational charities.
And I guess there might be some charities listening to this who think, you know, yes, that's all very well, but, you know, our donors expect more of us. And so they expect a written letter from our CEO for their £50 donation, which, you know, as you say, isn't something that a corporate organization might think is worthwhile. But that being said, I guess the argument then is for those organizations that may be doing too much in terms of putting too much resource into thanking people for a relatively small gift, they're at one end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, there might be those, as you talked about earlier, who aren't doing enough to keep those supporters engaged. And so what you're talking about is a process which will help both groups, both ends of the spectrum, to come to somewhere in the middle where they're able to deliver better value for their supporters.
Yeah, well, one of the main driving factors for increased retention is that the donor perceives the charity to be effective and efficient. Okay, that's it's really important to stress that point. And I would argue that modern consumers of all age ranges, by the way, might consider that for a £30 donation, that the postal delivery and production and environmental effects of a thank you letter is disproportionate. Now, obviously, I'm going to be challenging some mindsets, you know, and I think this is, I come back to this cultural evolution that needs to perhaps happen, is this acceptance of what we can do and what's sustainable. Mm. It has to be, that thanks needs to be proportionate. And as I say, donors, and this is very much driven by their experiences in the retail world. I mean, that's where our levels of expectations are set.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And, you know, donors, you know, when I say modern donors, I'm talking about, you know, right now, anyone of any age range, they're expecting efficiency, they're expecting speed, they're expecting, and that's what they judge a charity on, really. So the means and method of communications needs to be proportionate to the value of support. And I think donors will appreciate that. What the fundamental thing is here is that there needs to be a strategic approach to consistent thanking and measurement of satisfaction levels with donors. And if your donors turn around and say, well, actually, I much prefer getting a letter, you know, act on that. But if that's not a pain point for them, then, you know, you've made the right decision about switching to, let's say, digital comms.
What advice would you give to charities regarding how they can track their KPIs, and why is tracking KPIs so important?
At the end of the day, Sam, it's impossible to manage what you're not measuring, okay? So it's crucial that our charities identify critical KPIs and measure their performance on a regular basis. As an example, let's consider for a moment how important customer satisfaction is in the commercial sector. You know, Trustpilot, yes, you know, other brands are available, it's everywhere. And it's a major swaying factor. And it's relied on by consumers when making a purchase or, you know, appointing a service provider. So I'd like to ask, you know, fundraising listeners, how often they're actively pursuing satisfaction surveys with their supporters. And in particular, lapsed donors, those who aren't supporting anyone. You know, and to any senior executive or trustee listening, where is donor satisfaction prioritised on their strategic vision and plans? Now, at the end of the day, happy donors lead to retained donors. And let's not forget that, you know, that retained donors are typically responsible for 55% of a charity's annual revenue. So if you don't have a process in place for measuring retention and satisfaction, then you're running the risk of not managing the majority share of your annual income. You know, and on that basis, I would say that a simple and straightforward KPI metric that any charity can start to track is donor satisfaction. And that's something well in the reach of most charities. You know, beyond that, I found that the not-for-profit sector is unfortunately limited with its options when it comes to KPI measurement. You know, outside of specialised consultancy, most charities are left kind of, you know, struggling with their own, you know, internal convoluted spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. And really there's little to no guidance or support from, you know, the philanthropic institutes that the UK has, really. If you look for information, it's few and far between. I suppose it's for those reasons that we've created our own FFT product, which allows, you know, all levels of experience fundraisers to understand the fundamental KPIs that are the foundations of sustainable fundraising. You know, primarily those KPIs are acquisition, retention, attrition, average gift values, and average giving frequency. Now, these KPIs have a direct effect on your annual revenue. So measuring and managing just those five KPIs, in my opinion, is crucial and a fundamental requirement for charities to conduct. So at the end of the day, the aim of our FFT service is to empower charities with a simple yet highly effective means of measuring their performance.
I mean, this sounds like a great tool for charities, Bernard. And I guess in the times that we're living in now, where a lot of charities are under extensive pressure to deliver, in some cases, more for their beneficiaries, and yet do so in a climate where there are fewer donors and you know, certainly different types of fundraising, there are some real challenges there from individual giving and things like that and events. But in terms of the resource that charities would need to manage better KPI tracking and responding to the outcomes of that KPI tracking, do you feel that there needs to be, do charities need to think about having new resource for that? Or is that something that they should be bringing in to their existing teams?
Well, I've seen quite a shift over the last 18 months of charities employing or seeking to employ data analysts within their organisation, which is met with mixed emotions from me in the fact that I'm going, well, that's great, but, you know, what is the data analyst's objectives? What is the framework that they're being asked to work within? And where is that advice and guidance about these metrics? As I mentioned before, I think there's very little support outside of that. So, you know, I think what may occur, and hopefully not as often as I fear it might be, is that a data analyst is brought in and there's no clear framework or objectives for them to achieve. But the signs are that charities are clearly, data and the analysis and the importance of data is clearly on their agenda. I mean, proportionally, I believe that, you know, the investment in analysis should be high, but, you know, let's be real about this. And as you kind of touched on, Sam, that, you know, where we're starting from, which is a point of very little analysis, and given the current climate that you've the challenges that are faced coming out of the pandemic and into cost of living crisis, this data analysis is probably not going to be right at the forefront of a fundraiser's priority at the moment. So what I would suggest is perhaps a more softer touch approach to begin with. So at this moment in time, asking a board of trustees to sign off on a major consultancy project for probably going to be a hard sell at the moment. But however, if a smaller investments or actions, and most importantly, the findings of that analysis is actively used and evidence is delivering positive change, there's going to be increased levels of trust and a greater propensity for charities to continue investing in this. So I suppose what I'm trying to advocate is start off small, but do it right. And you clearly see the benefits and gains of analysis. And if you feed so strongly into your strategic planning and resources and budget allocations, it should be, you know, a go-to thing on at least an annual basis. And for that reason, the RFF team, we've specifically price pointed at a fairly low price point. It's less than £400 to run a report. Or you can have an annual subscription for £200 a month, and we're hoping that that's a low price point that's going to encourage any level of fundraiser to be able to run their own reports, assess and understand fundraising. You know, and that could develop then further into a larger investment strategy for internal resources and future planning for the charity. So it's a soft step approach really to culturally embedding KPI analysis, measuring and managing.
For charities listening to this, they're thinking about, okay, starting from scratch, we haven't got this in place at the moment. So one thing is to contact you guys and to look at this model. If even kind of getting that initial cost is going to be a challenge, would one other kind of opportunity be perhaps for those charities that have maybe got corporate partnerships to talk to the corporate partnership or to the corporate partner to see to get some knowledge from them about how they track these types of measurements with their business, because presumably it's about bringing KPIs into the board room and getting everybody in an organization understanding the need for KPIs. That seems to be a kind of a fundamental first step for fundraisers.
Yeah, definitely. There needs to be that holistic cultural acceptance and embedding of things like KPI analysis and also donor care, which you know we talked about before. I think that idea about getting corporate support will be good. I think also the point to mention is that you know, we're talking about the not-for-profit sector, which is a huge market vertical. But if you segment that down into different groups, let's say, for example, the hospice sector, hospices collaborating together to undertake you know, a shared analysis is probably going to be much more cost effective for the groupers rather than them doing it individually. And they probably share a lot of their same findings. So I think that's another idea, is that there's lots of supporter groups out there is chipping in together to conduct, you know, some segmented analysis.
Bernard McCabe, thank you for contributing to Charity Chats.
Thanks, Sam. Lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Big thank you to Bernard McCabe for sharing his insights and expertise with us here on Charity Chats. How do we keep our existing supporters engaged and committed to supporting our charities while delivering against our fundraising targets to ensure our work can continue? The risk of focusing too much time and effort on recruiting new donors at the cost of our existing supporters is a challenge that key performance indicators, KPIs, may help us to overcome. It's impossible to manage what you're not measuring. Bernard talked about the key performance indicators of acquisition, retention, attrition, average gift values, and average giving frequency. By taking steps to measure these, organisations can identify room for improvements, test and learn, and substantially grow their organisation's impact on both those they exist to support and their donors. We need a cultural evolution to identify what is proportionate and what is sustainable. By better understanding our KPIs, we can better understand our audiences, the needs of our supporters, and calibrate our offering to deliver for them and in doing so, our charity. Donor satisfaction KPIs could help charities to identify where they can embrace technology to support a more efficient use of their resource, while also evolving their approach to delivering for their supporters. Donors need to see the charities they support as being effective and efficient, and there might be ways for charities to balance this with delivering emotional value and determining when to use automated or bespoke means of delivering this value. So thank you, dear listener, for getting this far with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to enjoy the podcast. We'd love to hear either way. Please do like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode, plus share with any colleagues or friends who may be interested. It's just left for me to thank our corporate sponsors. This episode of Charity Chat has been brought to you by our platinum sponsor, Work for Good. Work for Good is a fundraising platform helping businesses raise funds for charities through their sales. The platform makes the legal agreement needed for businesses to fundraise from sales quick and simple, saving charities time and resource and enabling them to raise more unrestricted income. Pop to workforgood.co.uk to learn more and to book a free demo. Also like to thank Giant Squid Audio Lab for sponsoring our podcast kit, Magda Axsmith for our beautiful website, check it out at charitychat.org.uk, and of course Forest of Fools for playing throughout the show and for playing us out right now. That's it from me. Keep on doing what you can. Speak to you soon. Cheerio. Bye-bye.